Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together. Hello and welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys. And today I am joined by Steve Piper from SI Digital. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Dave.
Some people may know you, especially from our conference.
Yep.
You came up on the stage and kind of shared your story. But for those that don't, it's a really good opportunity to do that. But first of all, SI Digital, that's your business. Tell us about that.
It's been going a while. I set it up 24 years ago now, so it's back in 2001. Originally, I was in Essex at the time, and I used to come down here. A friend of mine was at university down here. And so when I set my own business, I kind of thought, well, I can do this for anywhere in the world because it's all web-based. Yeah. And moved down to Southsea about a year and a half later. And have been there ever since. So we're a relatively small agency. It's about 10 of us at the moment. But we're fairly big hitting in that we work with companies like Whitelink, Hasbro Toy Company. We've built a number of insurance websites for the likes of the AAA and Co-op Insurance and people like that. And also Harwin, who are a major Portsmouth company as well, yep. Massive employer in Portsmouth. We design and build websites, apps, and sort of bespoke software for a range of companies, both in the UK and some in the US, all based from our office at the bottom of Elm Grove, which is opposite Cotai Tappers.
So you're more the technical side of it. So you're not a marketing agent.
No. We leave that to the other people. I've kind of always believed in being, you know, good at a couple of things and being very, very good at those and leaving other people to do the other things. So we've got an excellent designer who we offer branding and design work. But when it comes to SEO, PPC, that kind of stuff, that's not us. Yeah. We'll happily refer people on and do introductions. But yeah, we don't get involved in that.
Mm. And what kind of... you know, what was the journey into that like? What inspired you to get into doing that sort of thing?
I used to work as a website manager for a hotel chain back in Romford, where I used to live for a while. And I've always enjoyed when computers first came out. I always enjoyed computers. And I also had a bit of a leaning towards sort of art when I was a kid as well. Right. So when computers became a thing, I started doing art on computers. Yeah. I mean, I'm 48, 49 now. This is quite a few years ago. And I just really enjoyed it. And it just kind of, I saw the it was just interesting to generate art on a computer.
Like the design side of it particularly.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I always enjoyed more. And then eventually I decided to go off on my own from the hotel chain. Turns out I'm not a very good developer, and I figured that out very quickly, very, very quickly indeed. So one of my first hire I had was a developer to take over that side of things because I was just so bad at it. I still have an interest in the design side of things, still have an interest in the way we code things. We enjoy solving problems. We enjoy the kind of the way people come to us and go, well, you know, we've been to a few agencies that have no idea how we're going to connect this bit of data with that bit of data or whatever it may be. We love that kind of challenge. Mm. We love the kind of, right, how can we make this work? How can we make things easier, streamline, while still making things look really good as well?
Yeah, definitely. And, The being a fairly small business in the city, what are the big challenges for you?
Recruitment is less of an issue. It used to be a bit of an issue because we are now offer kind of remote working for. We're not fully remote. We have sort of occasional monthly meetings in the office. We find office space can be tricky. Yep. We have far too big an office space at the moment. We're tied in for another 2 years, and the cost of that is a little bit much for what we need it for. But there's no sort of smaller offices that are suitable for what we need. Our office now is typically used for sort of client meetings, especially when we have the first client meeting.
Yeah, you wouldn't be the first person that I've heard that from in terms of there's an ideal size kind of space for small businesses, and that's what's really lacking. It's people, it's either too small or too big. The sort of happy medium for a small business just seems to be, and it might just be that's because that's where most of the demand is, so it's all taken up.
I mean, Lakeside does a good job of offering various spaces and different sizes, and that's great. but I've always wanted to try and keep in the city.
Yeah.
Because we go to local restaurants, we go to South Sea Coffee and places like that to take our clients out to try and keep sort of money in the local local economies. We don't tend to go to Starbucks for our coffees and things like that. So I've always wanted to try and keep it in the city if possible. Also, people that do live in the city can then walk to the office as well. So it cuts down on the commuting and the cars on the road.
Yeah, definitely. And in terms of the future for your business, where do you want to go? Where do you see it going? What's the sort of aspiration?
We need to grow. We are a really annoying size at the moment. We're too big and too small at the same time, which is weird, but it's a stage you can't get to. So we need to grow. And I don't want to grow to sort of 50 plus. I think somewhere in the sort of 25, 30 people range would be about right. I still want to keep doing what we're doing. I'm interested to see what can happen with AI.
Yeah.
At the moment, there's a lot of bluster and a lot of, oh, isn't it amazing, and so on. We're not finding, real world quality examples of AI being used for what we do.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that in 2-3 years time
that won't be the case.
And there could be some fantastic uses of it that we would really get on board with. I think there's still, there's a lot of challenges out there still. And obviously the internet's not going away, so it's going to be here for a while. So I think, there is a lot of potential, and I think there are a lot of exciting things to come. Just don't know what they are yet.
Yeah, do you know what? It's interesting. I read somewhere a little while ago that said within 5 years, Google will be redundant. You won't use a Google search engine. And I kind of thought, oh, that's just nonsense. But I now find myself using AI more for answering questions than I would an internet search engine. So I suppose there's something in that, but from the work I do in terms of photography, I suppose there was a fear that AI might take over. You wouldn't need photography because people would just generate images, but AI still gets things too wrong for that to be an issue. 8-fingered people is so common. That's just one example. But where it's really good is things like if I want to expand an image, or I want to change the angle of the crop and I need to fill in the triangles, and it generates those little bits really, really well. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So in some respects, it becomes an amazing tool. So I think it's here to stay. It's where it goes, what it does, the impact of it. Especially in the digital world, I can see that it would be really, really powerful. But will it ever take over? Will it ever be able to create in the same way as the sort of creative mind of a human?
I think that's the case. I mean, I saw a brief interview with, I think it was Ben Affleck the other day on Instagram. And he was saying, AI has potentially has a place once the idea has been created.
Yeah.
But AI can only get data from stuff that already exists. So the initial creation of the idea, AI isn't necessarily great at. And that's where, I think a good humans can play a good part in that.
Yeah. And it's funny because you hear some sectors sort of talk about AI more than others. And I suppose anything IT based, it probably looks like a more natural fit.
Mm-hmm.
But I read an article a little while ago where they were talking about the jobs most under threat from AI. And actually hospitality was right at the top. And it was sort of, robot and AI check-ins and ordering and waiting and all of that sort of stuff. And, I can't imagine a robot AI-controlled waiter bringing food, but that was like listed as one of the most under-threat sectors from it. So
yeah, not for me.
It's, it's bizarre. It will be interesting, definitely. So our connection obviously doesn't come from your business per se. It comes from something else. And this is what we talked about on stage at the conference. But you came to our 2025 conference.
That is correct, yes.
And that was that was the thing that influenced you, wasn't it? It was something we did at the 2025 conference. So shall I let you tell the story of what happened then?
Yeah, no. So I was at the 2025 conference, really glad to have been there. And there was a slide that came up around prostate cancer. Mm. And the slide was sort of, you know, 1 in 8 men will get prostate cancer at some point in their life. And it kind of sort of explained the demographics of people most, you know, potentially at risk. Mm. And the other part of it was that you were offering free PSA tests as part of Shaping Portsmouth. And there's two things sort of went through my head. One, the dawning realization that I am now well into middle age, which, yeah, shocked me a little bit, but, you know, I get that. Yeah. And the second thing was my granddad, who used to say to me, you know, if someone's offering you something for free, my boy, because we used to call people my boy, he said, yeah, like, you know, don't turn your nose up at it. So I thought, well, you know, I might as well go and have a PSA test. You know, I thought, well, it's a free test, mm, and, you know, at least it rules it out. And I did. So the test was held at the Marriott Hotel, top of Portsmouth. I think it was only about a week after the conference, maybe.
Yeah,
a week, 10 days. Yeah. And it, very simple, parked up the hotel, went in there, filled in some forms, and it is just a blood test. It's just like you, when you have a blood test with, you know, I used to give blood. It's just the same thing. They, you know, needle into a vein in the arm and, you know, take a small vial of blood and that's it. You're done. So yeah, I had the test done. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I've got that done. That's great. I'll just crack on with my life. And I was away at a conference. We actually had a toy conference in London. We've got a few toy clients, so toy industry. And I got the email from the testing company saying there was a slightly higher than expected result. Yeah. So, you know, obviously a bit of a panic. I phoned to my wife and just sort of said, well, you know, this has happened. And then got back from the conference. And the next stage was to have an MRI. So I booked in with the MRI up at QA. I can't remember the time scale, probably a few weeks after that. So went in for the MRI. I've had a couple of MRIs in my time. I get a bit claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And
that, I think if you're going to describe MRIs as anything, claustrophobic is the key one.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're quite noisy as well. And I can kind of, I can block that out. But the fact that you have to stay very still in quite a small tube was a little bit fun. Anyway, so you had the MRI and then, you know, a couple of weeks later, results came back from that, which were not quite inconclusive, but there was something there, but they weren't sure what it was. So next step was a further PSA test. Again, you know, just a simple blood test. That was up at QA.
Was that your second PSA test?
Yes, second.
The first one being the one you did with us.
Mm-hmm.
So you had an MRI off the back of that test on its own?
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting because I had to have two tests before I could have the MRI.
Yeah, I can't remember what my number was. I may have been 5 point something. Yeah. I forget the numbers. But I wonder whether that number's possibly higher than they're expecting for someone my age or whatever, which is why they put me in for an MRI. But then, yes, I do remember each time I did one of these, I sort of said to my wife, oh, you know, this one will come back fine. It'll be all right. And then, so yeah, the results of the second PSA came back and the number got worse from the first PSA.
Yeah, yeah.
So they then suggested I have a biopsy done again up at QA. And at this point, I'm kind of thinking I can't keep saying, you know, oh, it'll be fine. I'll come back from this one. You know, it'll be fine. So I went up for the biopsy and the results came back from that 2 days before we went on family holiday to Bruges, which was nice.
Not good timing.
Not good timing, no, but it's peace of mind, I suppose. So went to see the consultant there. It's quite funny. My wife picked up on the consultant's face before we went in. I didn't notice. My wife said, oh, she looked a bit kind of, you know, a bit wary. So, yes, she told me that I had prostate cancer. And it looked like it was, from the sort of the mix of the MRI and the biopsy, looked like it was fairly sort of early stages and not too sort of, hadn't grown too much, she thought. There are various options you can have depending on the type of cancer, I suppose your age and things like that. Some of them are sort of just watch and wait and, you know, keep having tests and make sure it doesn't go up. Some are medication. But for me, they suggested having a prostatectomy. So have my prostate removed under general anaesthetic. So I had that news in the back of my head when I went to Bruges and I did sample a few more beers than I probably normally would have done whilst I was out there. But, you know, I was allowed to. Yeah, I was allowed to. Yeah. So then came back from Bruges and September 5th went in for the prostatectomy.
Yeah.
Which was, it was okay. I was a bit, I was kind of slightly gung-ho about things until I was finally on the table and I was kind of on my own. Yeah. Not wearing a lot. And there's all these people sort of busying around you. And suddenly I felt very, very isolated, very, yeah. very lonely. Yeah. Very lonely, very vulnerable. And I think one of the nurses, she was, I think her name was Gemma. At the time I was being sedated, so some of it doesn't come out. But she held my hand and it was kind of, I just remember that before going under. And yeah, 5 hours later I came out missing a prostate.
Yeah. It's, and that in itself, see, I would have expected sort of a very small keyhole scar. But that's not the case at all. You know, this is the clearly what was involved in removing a prostate is not that straightforward with the scars you left after. But I suppose, you know, compared to the alternative.
Yes. Yeah. That's, I'm still quite impressed the way they did it. I had five holes in my abdomen where sort of various things went in and out. Mm. And then a bigger line, probably about sort of 5, 6, 7 centimeters long, just above my belly button, where they removed the, the prostate from. So you know, it wasn't terribly bad. And I imagine the scars will probably go in time. Yeah. They're still there at the moment, but
But again, the alternative.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the it's interesting. So I think the first point is to cycle all the way back to the beginning, and that PSA test. Can you remember how long the whole thing took?
Oh, minutes. They gave me some paperwork to fill in. I started reading something. They called me in, and then that's 3 minutes later, I'm out.
Longer than the test, didn't it? The paperwork.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the timings they give us are 3 men in every 5 minutes, something like that. It's really, really efficient.
Yeah.
But I think the point is, it is a really small, rapid blood test. Mm-hmm. Can you remember how long it took for you to get your blood test results?
I think it was less than a week. Because it was almost at the end of January that I got the results, because we were say, at that conference, which I think was around the 30th, 31st of January. Mm. So, I think it was just a few days.
I got mine next day.
Oh, that's, yeah. Very good.
And that really shocked me. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Mm.
I suppose we probably all associate anything to do with health as being inefficient, but I couldn't believe how quick that was. But yeah, I suppose you see lots of stuff on telly and lots of people talking about prostate exams and what's involved. And I think what's the proper title? The digital rectal examination.
Yes.
there's a place for that. And but that's not what's involved here. It is a really quick and easy, simple blood test.
Yep.
I would suggest that by the time you need the digital rectal examination, you probably don't care about that. You want other answers.
Yes.
So it's not an issue. And my understanding of it is, from how it was explained to me by doctors, is that as problems develop with your prostate, it A, gets harder, and B, gets bigger. And that's what they're looking for in that examination. But PSA indicator, really simple blood test. They measure the levels of prostate-specific antigen in your blood.
Well, no.
The number varies per your age.
Mm-hmm.
So the older you are, the higher the threshold. I think it was 4 point something was the, or just over 4 was the threshold for me.
Yep.
I think I was at about 4.7. So they then wanted a second test, which was higher. And that's when I then went for the MRI. But my MRI came back clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the difference between and we've spoken about this before, because I think they can say you haven't got it from an MRI. They can say you are all clear. There is definitely nothing to worry about. But they can't say for sure the other way at all.
Yeah. And I think that's what that happened for me, is that there was some... They couldn't categorically say it was all clear, so they had to had to assume the worst, I guess.
Yeah. So, and that's when the biopsy comes in, I suppose. So I was told I was told that to have the MRI, you had to have two tests above the levels, because there are things that can make the levels spike. Hence why I had to have the second one. But I mean, the whole thing happened within a couple of weeks.
Mm.
I don't know about you. But you hear people talk about the NHS, they call it the cancer fast track.
Mm-hmm.
I found it phenomenally efficient.
Yeah. Almost too quick. Yeah. I mean, I was getting appointments booked by sort of text. And then the paperwork for the appointment or the letter saying I've got an appointment came in after the appointment. Mm. It was that quick. I absolutely nothing but praise for the NHS and how quickly everything was done. Once something was kind of, you know, something was marked as being unusual.
Mm.
It was, ruthlessly quick and very efficient.
Yeah.
But a huge amount of paperwork. Once I got the diagnosis as well, the actual diagnosis, pamphlets and leaflets and, you know, all this new other stuff coming through the post and so on. But yeah, not to knock.
Yeah. So obviously I've not got to the biopsy stage, because I was given the all clear at MRI. And clearly you very quickly saw a consultant that kind of explained the scenario to you. But how did you find the support with the treatment options? Because you opted for the prostatectomy. 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 Was that sold to you as this is what you really need to do, or were you given different treatment options?
No, I think the only two options I had... Well, I think there are three options as far as I can remember for me anyway.
Mm.
One was wait and see. I'll come back to that one in a minute. Another one is sort of like drugs-based, not quite chemo, but kind of that sort of thing. And then the third one was the prostatectomy. The wait-and-see option, I did sort of question this with the consultant. I said, well, you know, I'm still relatively young and so on. And she said, well, that kind of almost plays against it.
Mm.
Because if you're already showing signs of it I thought 48 is a relatively young age. Mm. You know, if you're already showing signs of it now, it's not going to get any better. It's only going to get worse. So that was kind of, you know, I've thought, well, yeah, let's just rule that one out now. With the prostatectomy, if you have that done, then if that doesn't quite work, then you have the option of the sort of the chemo or the sort of chemical approach to it, which is why I went for the prostatectomy.
Yeah.
By her recommendation. I'm also a great believer. If you've got someone who's spent years and years and years at university and goodness knows what else, being a consultant, they probably know more than you. So if she recommended it to me, as she did, then I thought I'd just go with that.
I think it's a fairly safe assumption that they're going to know what they're talking about.
Yep.
It's, I find it interesting because I know a number of different people now that have been diagnosed, and I've heard different people being given different options. So they clearly don't just throw removing the prostate at everyone.
Yep.
They do consider different things. And obviously you at the conference, I know, so we've, last year we had 8 red results in the testing program that we did. I know that because they're all recorded online and I can look them up. So I know that there are 8 red results. I know that statistically 1 in 4 come back red. Sorry, 1 in 4 that come back red are diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And I think it might be 3 or 4 in 100 tests are red. So you're generally looking at one diagnosis per 100 tests statistically. But I know on that day we did about 30 tests up at the Marriott that day that you tested.
Yep.
I know we had 4 reds, and I know 2 of you were diagnosed out of that, And in fact, you at the conference met the wife of the other person that was diagnosed at that same.
Yes, yes, same she came up to me after I was on stage for a little.
Yeah. So, if you looked at the other tests in isolation, statistically, there's probably another one from last year kicking around, and statistically, we should have a diagnosis from the year before kicking around. So we could potentially have identified four men so far. And I mean, obviously, you alluded to being sort of quite young in sort of prostate terms, happily admitting to being middle aged. But in terms of that prostate, if you went into your GP, they would probably suggest that until you were 50, you shouldn't need a PSA test.
Yeah, I've heard from a slightly older gentleman that I know, and he said he struggled to get the doctor to. Putting forward for a PSA test. And he said, you know, I've got concerns, I've got, you know, reasons for wanting this. And the doctor was almost kind of, no, which I found quite shocking. But I guess having these, the test that we did, means you can kind of bypass that.
So I went into my GP over 50 with symptoms to talk about those symptoms. And I asked for a PSA test, having been involved in PSA testing in my policing career and setting it up. So I knew what it was. So I asked for a PSA test, and I got offered a urine test that they dipped, and they said I didn't need a PSA test. I was dehydrated, and I should go away and drink lots more water. Now, I suppose anyone that knows anything about your prostate and the issues that come with that, drinking more water is probably the single worst thing. Didn't help at all. Created more problems. And I went and got the PSA test myself. So different prostate issue for me than cancer. But it's frightening how many people get refused that at 50. But the point I was alluding to with you happily, sort of describing yourself as young in those terms is actually the other guy whose wife you met he's 44, so even younger still. You shouldn't probably rule yourself out just on age.
No, absolutely.
You know, if you're over that threshold of 40, I would argue that you want to be getting regular PSA tests. Because as your case shows, it gives you treatment options.
Yeah.
Rather than being told it's prostatectomy and chemotherapy because it's gone too far.
Yeah, I mean, early diagnosis for this one is a relatively slow growing cancer. So, you know, there are a lot of benefits to, huge number of benefits to catching it early. And like you say, I mean, just getting an early PSA test, early 40s, perfectly, you know, sensible thing to do. The earlier you catch it, the better the options, the better prognosis, and so on. So, I would recommend any man listening in around about in their 40s to go and get one done.
What you've done there, Steve, is you've pretty much articulated a business case for a mass screening program.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And clearly there are lots of organisations, and I think Prostate Cancer UK are probably the most interesting because in the last decade they've done a complete about turn from you shouldn't get PSA testing to you now should get PSA testing and there should be a national screening program. And then recently there's been an announcement at government level that there will not be a mass screening program, which just makes no sense. How do you view that one?
This is slightly contentious, isn't it, I suppose? I can understand why they don't want a mass screening because it's going to highlight high levels of people that probably then need to have a MRI. Mm. An MRI is a costly, time-consuming, resource-intensive thing to be done.
Yeah.
And I guess they don't want to put the NHS in any more burden than it currently is. I mean, the flip side of that coin is that men will die as a result of that.
Yeah.
So it's I obviously I can see both sides, but I think us men are worth keeping around. So I think it's not the most sensible thing to do to not put in a mass screening. Mm. Or at least start it somewhere. At least start, even if you started at, 48 plus or something like, I don't know. But just start with something. Mm. It would be better than just not doing anything at all.
Yeah, definitely. And it's certainly something that we're going to keep banging the drum on and championing. I think we will, as long as the demand is there, we will keep trying to find a way to make the testing program work. So how we run it at Shape in Portsmouth is we will put on a PSA screening event like the one you went to at the Marriott. We will go to employers and offer it to them to fund any of their staff having that test that they want to. But what we do is because we're doing it en masse, we can negotiate a deal with the tester to bring the cost down. And then we use money that we source through grants, sponsorship, whatever, to then match fund the cost with the business. So we're effectively offering employers a test for £10 per staff member that they're getting to do it. Which is very good value, especially when you consider, the outcome.
Yes.
Potentially.
Yep.
So we've got plans to run more of those events this year. I know last year we did one event, which was with the support of Portsmouth Historic Quarter and the Hannah and the team down there, in Boathouse 4, which we opened up for any member of the public to book on and pay the £10 themselves, and come in. So we did a few there. We'll probably do one like that again this year, but absolutely worth doing. I can't say this enough. And obviously you're a living testament to the value of having these tests. Interestingly, because we were talking about the efficiency of the whole thing, and I have a raised PSA level. So I now have a 6-monthly test through the NHS, and I have a self-service app. I get the paperwork for the bottle labels and everything sent to me. I just book the test with a phone call, turn up. I'm in and out of the QA hospital before I've even hit the 20 minutes on the car park.
It's good when you can do that, isn't it?
I love it. The silly things you get excited about, but not having to pay anything for parking at the QA is definitely one of them.
Does that make us middle-aged as well?
I think it does. I think it definitely does. I'm guessing because having had your prostate removed, do you still need to have your PSA?
Yeah, I've got to put one in a couple of weeks' time, actually.
Yeah.
So I think very similar to you. I think mine are actually sort of quarterly for the rest of, for four quarters, and then I go to 6-monthly and then annually from there, I think. Obviously, without having a prostate, once I've had a few of these results that are zero, then it should
Fairly
be
safe.
Should be a safe bet that it's not going to change.
Yeah.
I'm slightly apprehensive because I've only had one all clear so far since the operation. So I think once I've had the next test done, which I say is sort of end of January-ish time, once that comes back, I think I'll have a higher confidence and a higher,
definitely. But I must admit if you do hit that that level where you enter that system, the support and the efficiency of it is tremendous. Mm. It's one of the single most efficient things ever. And my last one before Christmas spiked high. I got called back. Could I just go and do a second one so they could double check it? That looked a little bit high when I self-served the result on the app, and I phoned up earlier in the week and very quickly got a phone call back, and they'd looked at my MRI from the first time, the consultant had given a view on it, and fortunately everything was fine, but I got a really good explanation around what was going on, and it's quite impressive to have that level of support and not have to mess around with GPs and things as well to get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The message is get it done.
Yeah. Simple, quick, easy blood test. They do them everywhere. Well, you can find one locally to get it done.
Yeah, and if you don't want to wait for us, an Arnex screening test, and you're thinking, right, I need to get this done now, Graham Fulford Charitable Trust, they run charity screenings all the time, all over the place, and you can go on their website and look for the next one in this area, book yourself on. And also Picasso, P-C-A-S-O, Picasso, mm-hmm. yep. Who are the ones that did your test, Steve. Another local charity who will offer it. So, yeah, well worth watching out for and definitely doing. But parking the prostate side of things then, Steve, and coming back to being a business person in Portsmouth, we always like to finish our podcasts by asking our guest for a suggestion, somewhere to go, something to do in Portsmouth. So what would be your tip?
I mean, there's lots to do. It's such a wonderful city. Mm. Having sort of come originally from Essex before this, I mean, I would never move out of Portsmouth. It's such a great place. For me, if I had to choose the one thing to do, it would be a visit to South Sea Coffee. Not only have they got the world's, the South Coast's best coffee, the food's amazing, the atmosphere's lovely. It's a great place to sort of sit and chill and enjoy great food, and just it's got such a nice vibe in there that you always leave, you know, one, content and full of, you know, great food and great coffee, but just happier and more chilled as well. So, if you're going to be in the city for a day, don't miss out on South Sea Coffee.
And it's definitely not like going into your average Starbucks or Costa.
No.
We are talking very niche and specialist coffees in there.
And other drinks as well. I mean, matches and things. I'm a flat white guy, I'm afraid. Yeah. So I have that, but it is brilliant.
It's some very interesting stuff in there. If you're a coffee aficionado, definitely go in there.
And they make all their own things as well. So, you know, the chutneys that go on your food, they make those. The love that goes into their food is just, next level.
You were talking there actually about, you know, what a great city Portsmouth is anyway. And I know that there was another little project that you were looking at around photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you're still looking at doing?
Yeah, we've got it's just a bit on the quiet at the moment, nearly there. We've got a great idea, especially with it being Portsmouth 100 this year. Yeah. We've got some great ideas around that. So
not something you want to reveal yet.
The grand reveal will come soon, just not quite today.
Yeah. Okay. We will look forward to that one. One for people to watch this space on.
Maybe we can come back and do another
something
podcast.
We'll certainly publicise at the point people need to know about that. So,
thank you.
Great. Steve, really grateful to you sharing your story. I think we need people like you that have been through it to show people that, you know, it can happen to you.
Yep.
And, one in eight. Or if you're of Black Afro-Caribbean origin, one in four, even more reason to do it. But I think it's really important to get that out there and for people to hear it. So thank you so much for sharing it. Thank you for doing it at the conference. Obviously a bit daunting to stick you up on stage in front of 560 people. Really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it.
And my thanks to Shaping as well, because if it wasn't at that conference last year, who knows where I would be right now. So thank you to you and Shaping for organising this.
Brilliant. Great talking to you. This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.